Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song. Something you never seen before. So gather around, squeeze it tight, 'cause you're bound to hear a little truth tonight. 'Cause the love around here is bound to make it fall. Head over heels for heaven above.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching through the book of Genesis, and we'll be continuing today with part one of The Just Shall Live by Faith. So let's turn in our Bibles to Genesis chapter 25, verse 1, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
Well, as we've studied through the life of Abraham, we come now really to the closing chapter in his life. As you remember, Sarah has already died. Abraham lived another 37 or so years after the death of Sarah. Isaac has been married to Rebekah. And so in chapter 25, we read Abraham again took a wife, and her name was Keturah. And she bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. Jokshan begot Sheba and Dedan. The sons of Dedan were Ashurim, Letushim, Leumim, and the sons of Midian were Ephah, Epher, Hanok, Abadah, and Eldah. All these were the children of Keturah. So, in his old age, Abraham again takes a wife. Shows you just how radically rejuvenated Abraham was. There was a point where he was incapable. And the scripture definitely indicates that the problem was on both sides. The deadness of Sarah's womb and Abraham's body that was also dead. So God radically rejuvenated Abraham, and so he marries again late in life. Now, this woman, Keturah, we know absolutely nothing else about her except what is stated here, so there's no sense in speculating in regard to her. But it is interesting looking at the names of her children that she bore. And probably the most familiar name in the list would be Midian. And we read much in the scripture about the Midianites, and some good, some bad. But yet we see the connection with these families. Many of these families in that region were actually related. There were the Ishmaelites, of course, who were the children of Ishmael, the son of Abraham, and then the Israelites ultimately, but then these other peoples that are mentioned here. Henry Morris said this, and I think it's worth repeating. He said, "The few intimations of the names of the sons of Keturah that have appeared in the archaeological inscriptions do seem to confirm the statement of verse 6. That they were sent by Abraham into the east country." And so we didn't read that far. Verse 5, "And Abraham gave all that he had to Isaac, but Abraham gave gifts to the sons of the concubines which Abraham had. And while he was still living, he sent them eastward away from Isaac his son to the country of the east." So again, back to Morris's quote, he says he sent them into the east country, which would mean into Arabia. Through millennia of migrations and intermarriages, it seems likely that all of these peoples, together with the descendants of Ishmael, Lot, and Esau, along with earlier descendants of Shem, and in some cases Ham, have gradually merged and become the modern-day Arabic peoples. So we got a huge family feud going on in the Middle East, basically. Everybody's related, most of them, back to Abraham. But Abraham gave all that he had to Isaac. And of course, Isaac, the covenant, you remember, God had made with Isaac. And so the sum of the years of Abraham's life, verse 7, which he lived, was 175 years. We were introduced to Abraham at the age of 75. And so we have looked at his life over a 100-year period. Now, of course, we've just gotten little glimpses here and there of that 100-year period, some of those key moments in his life. But now he's come to the end. Then Abraham breathed his last and died in a good old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people. And his sons, Isaac and Ishmael, buried him in the cave of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, the field which Abraham purchased from the sons of Heth. There Abraham was buried, and Sarah his wife. And it came to pass after the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac, and Isaac dwelt at Beer Lahairoi. So, a good, long, godly, faithful life for Abraham, the man of faith. In Hebrews chapter 11, the author, in talking about faith, he looks at some of the great men and women of faith in the Old Testament, and of course, Abraham is there. And I thought it would be good for us just to sort of take an overview. We've been looking at the life of Abraham for a few months now, and rather than just, you know, sort of leave it there and move on, we'll do that with our next study. But let's just go back over and highlight some of the key points, which are actually already done for us in Hebrews chapter 11. But once again, I think it would be good to encourage ourselves just in this area of faith, because faith is so vital. It's the one thing that you cannot do without, because without faith, it's impossible to please God. So let's go ahead and just flip over to Hebrews chapter 11, and we'll pick up in verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise, as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. By faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, "In Isaac your seed shall be called," concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. So there's the synopsis of the life of Abraham. And I think the author here, he hits on three key points of faith for Abraham. First of all, in verse 8, by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. Now, we live in a time where I think we have done a pretty good job of eliminating the need to live by faith. We have built a world that is very, you know, capable of taking care of us in so many ways. And not only have we built this kind of a world, but we've also developed a dependency upon the system. And, you know, much of it is good in many ways. Much of it really does sort of, to some degree anyway, eliminate the need to live by faith, or eliminate the opportunities to live by faith that previous generations have had. And I think, as good as it is in one sense, I think there's a negative side to it. Because it's resulted in, I believe, sort of a dwarfing of us in the spiritual sense. You know, when you read about previous generations of Christians before the modern age, before the age of all the technological development and things like that, you find that there tended to be just a deeper faith, a greater commitment, a greater dependency on God, trusting in the Lord. And we've, like I said, we've sort of circumvented that to some degree today. You know, if you go through a time of depression, you run over to the psychologist and he prescribes some antidepressants, and, you know, you take a few of those and then you're right back in action. Back in earlier generations, you had to get on your knees, call out to God, trust God, depend on him. And the same is true for many different kinds of things. But one thing that I think we all are realizing presently is that this system that we've developed is not quite as secure or stable as we have assumed that it is. We're seeing that currently, aren't we? We've had all of this security and all of this seeming stability, and within just a matter of a few months, our world has been rocked. Our world has been shaken. And many people have realized, or beginning to realize, that the things that they were trusting in, the things that they thought were absolutely secure and immovable and, you know, always going to be there, they're finding that, boy, what is happening? Suddenly, those institutions and those things that we were so sure about are faltering. And you know what's happening on the good side of it? Lots of people are waking up and realizing they need better answers to the big questions in life than the ones that have been provided by the modern world. I was talking with a guy yesterday, and he came to share with me about a ministry that is an online sort of evangelistic ministry. There's a particular group of people who have set up a number of websites, 100 or so websites, And if you go, you know, say to Google and you just type in looking for God, those websites that they've set up will come up and you can go ahead and click on the website. And then, it'll basically just give you an introduction to the Christian faith and walk you right on down the road to the point of actually receiving Christ. And here's the astounding thing. He was telling me a few years ago, they were trying to recruit churches to get involved and to do follow-up with people. And they were having about 5,000 responses a month. So worldwide, about 5,000 people were responding each month and, you know, actually going through those steps to the point where they would, you know, register a decision for Christ and then a desire to have somebody contact them. 5,000 people a few years ago. He was telling me they are up to 600,000 people a month presently. And he said it's just been skyrocketing over the past couple years. And these sites, of course, are they're available all over the world. So people from all over the world are coming onto these sites, finding out about the Christian faith, and then registering for a decision. And about 1/4 of them are indicating that they would like to be followed up with. They'd like somebody to contact them. They'd like to study the Bible. They'd like to get plugged into a church in their area. You know, but as he's telling me that, I'm thinking, wow, you know, the Lord is shaking up the planet. He's shaking up the nations. And those things that people have trusted in are beginning to be seen for what they have always been, really, you know, they're temporal. And so people are looking beyond that. But you see, we as God's people, we should be living, we already should have been living to some extent with no major regard or dependency on those institutions or systems anyway, because that's not what we're supposed to be putting our confidence in or our trust in. When I was young and just ordained, we had the option, those who are ordained into the ministry have the option of opting out of Social Security. And I did that ages ago. I can't tell you how many people have said to me, oh, you opted out of Social Security, or what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to trust God. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I've been doing. That's what I plan to keep doing as long as I'm alive. I'm not going to trust in Social Security. And, you know, again, something that at one time seemed so certain, so secure, so stable, now there's talk about whether there's even going to be any Social Security available for, you know, the coming generations. But my point is this. This is what happens to us. Instead of living by faith, we just get sucked up into the system itself, and we find ourselves really depending on so many of the wrong things and not really depending on the Lord like He would have us to. Abraham was a man who, he lived by faith. And we see that here in verse 8. And again, of course, we've looked at it already to some extent, but he went out not knowing where he was going. Boy, that is such a great description of what it is to live by faith. Going out not knowing where you're going, but you're going out because God is calling you to go. You see, we're so programmed to think in terms of, well, you know, we've got to see it all laid out before us. We've got to sit down and calculate it all out and make sure that it's all going to work out. And then, you know, if it looks good, then we'll go ahead and make that move. But that's not the way God operates. That's not the way He's ever operated. And that's not the way we should be thinking if we're going to really, you know, experience that full blessing of the life of faith. Remember Paul, in writing to the Corinthians, he said these words. He said, "For we walk by faith, not by sight." We walk by faith, not by sight. He's making a contrast between faith and sight. And you could even say that sight would be a reference not just to sight in the visual sense, but it's more even of a general reference to the senses. We walk by faith, not by our senses or not by our feelings. At least that's the way we're supposed to walk. You see, if I only move in the direction of things that I can understand or things that I can figure out or things that feel like I should go this way because, you know, it seems to me through my mental calculations that it's all going to be good, then I am going to potentially miss out on a ton of wonderful things that God might want to do. And this is something that I believe we need to really, you know, we need to grasp this. When you start living by faith, inevitably you will be accused of things like irresponsibility. You'll be accused of things like, you know, hey, that's fanatical. What are you thinking? What are you doing? And if you've never been accused of that, maybe you've never really been living by faith at any point. Because faith looks crazy to the natural man. Faith looks irresponsible a lot of times. Well, what do you mean you're just trusting God? What is that? You got to do something. You can't just trust God. Well, if God has said something to you specifically, if God has told you something, then regardless of what it looks like, you've got to stick with what God has told you. And you see, that's where it will get difficult at times for people. Because it doesn't look like it's going to work out. It doesn't look like it's going to go in that direction. It looks like you're being irresponsible. But there you are by faith. Now, imagine Abraham. Imagine when he's leaving his homeland in Ur of the Chaldees. And imagine as he's packing up and getting ready to head out, and his neighbors are coming and saying, well, where are you going? I don't know. Well, what do you mean you don't know? Well, I don't know where I'm going. Well, why are you leaving? Well, God told me to. Well, you mean God told you to leave, but he didn't tell you where to go? That's right. Oh, that's crazy. That's nuts. You can't leave not knowing where you're going. But that was the very thing that God called Abraham to do. To leave, not knowing where he was going. You see, and oftentimes what the Lord will do is he will call us to take a step of faith where we have to step in a direction. We have to start down a road without a clear understanding of where we're going to end up at, but just knowing that we just got to get started and trust that as we're going, God is going to, he's going to move us. He's going to lead us. I have a friend. He's pastored up in upstate New York for the past 30 years or so. But he's got one of those great stories of faith, you know, where he just packed up his Volkswagen back in the 70s with his wife and his two sons, and they just took off for the East Coast. And didn't have any kind of security, didn't have any certainty of a job, just felt like God was calling him to go and to just see what the Lord would do. And he got out there to New York, and he was there for a time, and, you know, a lot of time passed, and nothing really materialized, and he began to doubt whether he had heard the Lord, and he began to question whether or not he'd made a mistake and rethink the whole thing. And, you know, I probably left prematurely from Costa Mesa. I probably need to go back. And as he tells the story, he called Pastor Chuck and said, you know, I think I blew it. I think I need to come back, and I'll do, you know, carpentry work or whatever. And Pastor Chuck's advice was, well, you know, just give it a little more time. Just trust the Lord. Just wait. Just give it a little more time. See what the Lord does. And just with that word of encouragement, he just gave it a little more time. And now, 30 years later, there's probably 30 or so churches that have been birthed out of the church that he finally planted back there. And, you know, I think when we're on Pastor's Perspective, answering questions from Rochester, New York, most of those people are sort of the fruit of Bill's ministry. But you know, it was back in those days, back in the hippie days, as we refer to them, back in the 70s, you know, you say, well, people were radical back then, you know, they had long hair and stuff, and, you know, they didn't even take showers, and of course they could go do things like that. You know, this is the 21st century. It's a little different now. God help us. It shouldn't be any different. It should be just like it was in the days of Abraham. So Abraham went out not knowing where he was going, but that's what God called him to do.
We'll return with more of our study through the book of Genesis in our next lesson as Pastor Brian continues with part two of The Just Shall Live by Faith. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled The Just Shall Live by Faith. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number BT0039. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
Turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.